You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joining me now is Jeff Siegel from the Step Back. Jeff, and various SB Nation sites as well. Jeff, what's going on?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we are here to look at the Cavs' payroll. Jeff is one of the people on Twitter that if you follow him, he will tweet out cap sheets and give you the money breakdown of what's going on with teams. Jeff, before we get into the new pieces the Cavs have, the not restructuring of their salary necessarily, but the changes in it, and because they are paying a little more tax now and they do have some more interesting decisions to make, where the Cavs are at financially. This is an expensive team. We don't really know yet how good this group actually is with the four new pieces and the six guys going out. With how expensive the Cavs are this year, $137 million payroll, what do you make of a team like this that is so undefined in so many ways being that expensive?
I mean, it is. I mean, for them, it really just is what it is with LeBron James. You have to go for it when you've got either the greatest or second greatest player of all time on your team. This is what this is the cost of having that guy. And, you know, it just there is no luxury tax limit, it seems like, for Dan Gilbert. I mean, maybe there's a number that he has in his head that I can't pay more than X number of dollars. But if LeBron's coming back next year, they have to bring back Rodney Hood, which we'll get to. Like, it's going to get super expensive for them again next year and probably the years after that. They're already in the repeater tax for this year, will be for, you know, next year and the year after if LeBron comes back. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be expensive, and that just sort of is what it is when you've got LeBron James on your team.
To put the number in context, they're just slightly, for this year, less expensive than the Warriors. The Thunder coming at third, the Heat at fourth, which is actually kind of surprising to me until I went and looked at that cap sheet. Washington at five, and the Pelicans at six. So this is a very expensive team, right up there with Golden State. Not the collection of talent Golden State obviously has, but LeBron, and you're right, like you go for it with LeBron. And I think the future of LeBron's decision is sort of the, and tell me if you disagree or not, and if you agree, kind of, I guess, elaborate why, I guess. But I think LeBron's free agency is sort of the big through line here, because it would not shock me if, let's say, LeBron says, I'm going to Houston in July. That's what he decides to do, and he goes and plays with Harden and Chris Paul and whatnot. It would not shock me if the Cavs, I don't know if they would bottom out, but it wouldn't shock me if they tried to shed some sort of salary. Like, when you look at the sheet, Kyle Korver is making 7.56. He's less valuable in a situation where you don't have LeBron, right? Like, he's fundamentally going to be less valuable. Maybe George Hill isn't as valuable in that situation either, and you draft a point guard with that Nets pick, and you try to move on from something like that. And it's harder because they have some future picks going out and whatnot, but it wouldn't shock me if they try to shed some salary. But you're right, if LeBron comes back, ESPN wrote about this, this could be a hugely expensive team for Dan Gilbert come next year, depending on what Rodney Hood gets and you know, if they keep all these other salaries that are currently on the books.
Yeah, I mean, if LeBron leaves and Rodney Hood leaves, they're already over the cap still at about $102 million. And so, like, that's, you know, you look at it there and you know that they're in for a very expensive team, really, whether he comes back or not. They can try to sort of shed some salary, but that's going to cost them, you know, future assets, which, you know, they're already out some future picks. You know, George Hill's contract, $19 million for next year, $1 million guaranteed in 19-20. That, you know, that's going to take an asset to get off of, even though he's a positive asset to Cleveland because of how, you know, because of where their team is, you know, for the rest of the league, he's not a positive asset. Same with Jordan Clarkson, same with Kyle Korver. You know, these are bad contracts who are for good players who are good with LeBron. But if LeBron's not there, this team is expensive and going the wrong way.
The Korver contract, I don't know how you felt about it when he signed it this summer. I think looking back, I think it's probably a little too high. I get why you pay him that, but considering his age, and some of it isn't guaranteed at the end, and I think that's kind of worth noting that it does kind of become less of an issue, but it's not great for a guy his age, and it seems like we don't really know what his role is going to be in this team for this year, and if that is just kind of a burden. But let's start with George Hill. $20 million this year, and $19 million next year. Just that $1 million guarantee. So basically, he's an. You could. I think the Cavs could try to sell him as an expiring. The question I have with Hill is I think obviously you're right. Like, he's a most positive asset because he's playing with LeBron. He fits really well with LeBron. This summer, if the Nets pick becomes something they try to trade or make some sort of moves, is it wrong to think that his salary is one of the ones they could try to use in to at least make money work for someone big? And it's too early to say what that might be, but Hill, if you're trying to get some big name player with the Nets, with the player that you take with the Nets pick or the Nets pick on draft night, some version of that, Hill seems like a guy that, because of that non-guarantee, basically, on the last year, the very small guarantee, he seems like a guy that they, I think, could sell as an expiring. Is that a wrong way to look at his contract?
No, I don't think it's a wrong way to look at it. They would have to, and they don't have to, but they would probably want to make that trade in the 18-19 league year. So they would draft somebody with that Brooklyn pick, but then have that trade sort of already lined up. It's hard to speculate at this point who that might be. It really might even be a sign-in trade for a free agent this summer who wants to come to Cleveland but isn't making a gargantuan amount of money. George Hill's $19 million wouldn't be enough, I don't think, to grab a max level guy, even the 25% max level, because of the Cavs' impacted tax situation. Their trades have to be, almost one to one in terms of salary coming in and out. So, but they could turn Hill into somebody maybe on a longer term deal who's making, in that $19 to $20 million range. But I don't expect, unless they have somebody in LeBron's camp who is telling them that he's coming back, they're not going to make that trade on draft night, I wouldn't think.
That's one of the things I think that makes this so interesting is LeBron's not the draft. Tell me if you disagree, but it's almost like the draft being before when LeBron's going to make his decision is kind of a problem, right? Like,
it's a problem for Cleveland.
It's a problem.
I think that's the way that it should be. For me, I would rather have the draft be, looking toward the future. The draft is, you draft best player available in most cases, and then you fill in the gaps in free agency. I'd rather have that than do free agency and then fill in the gaps with fit based in the draft. That's just my own personal taste.
No, I agree with you.
Yes, in Cleveland's case, this is particularly problematic because their best asset that's not LeBron James is this Brooklyn pick, but they don't really know what their team's going to look like when they make that pick unless they can talk to LeBron and figure that out, which seems unlikely.
And I think the one parallel I've said it a couple times, and I think it will come up again, is you look back to when he came back, and we're not going to spend all the time talking about the Nets because it's going to be the last thing, but with Andrew Wiggins, we're going to go back and look at that draft, and he's not going to be the best guy in that draft, but I think he was a reasonable number one pick at that time. I think the situation of Kevin Love becoming available and LeBron signaling that he wanted to play with that guy sort of helped makes that trade, makes that happen, and it makes a lineup, and you just don't, it's too early to speculate who could be available. The Love stuff was already kind of brewing going into that summer, and it had been brewing. Doesn't really seem like there's a guy right now that fits that criteria. There's going to be someone that comes available, but you just look at the Paul George would be like the dream, and it was the Cavs' dream last summer. He's a free agent this summer. It's not, and he's going to be demanding quite a bit of money. There's not really anyone else in my mind right now that the Cavs would really be in contention with, and that kind of makes this tricky as well. Before we move on to Hood, who I think is going to be the most immediate interesting guy here, do you have Hill's 31? Is there any concern that $19 million could just look really bad as early as next season? I mean, he's looked re-energized with the Cavs, but he's had that toe injury last year. In your mind, is there a concern that that could be a bad contract as early as next year, even because he just isn't playing well, and what other factors you want to throw in there?
I mean, it's a bad contract if LeBron doesn't come back. That's how that usually will go for a guy like Hill, who's, a very solid supporting piece and a very worthwhile supporting piece on $19 million a year if you have one or two guys above him on your payroll. But if he's your linchpin of the offense in a way that, he might be if LeBron leaves, or he's a bigger part of the offense if LeBron leaves, and then the team is not as good. And we saw how his effort level, maybe waned a little bit in Sacramento, when obviously the Cavs wouldn't fall down to being Sacramento because they'd still have Kevin Love and a few other good pieces. But you saw how his effort level and his engagement sort of dropped when he was not in the best situation. But you know, if LeBron comes back, then he's a positive, and if he doesn't, then like a lot of guys on this team, he turns into a slight negative for me.
100%, I think a slight negative. If LeBron doesn't come back, that's a disaster. It could be if they end up kind of like a better off than the Kings, but still Kingsy East. That's gonna look really bad in a hurry. Looking at Rodney Hood, restricted free agent this summer, has a cap hold of like $3.4 million or around that. It's a summer where we already know that there's not going to be a lot of money. Restricted free agency is not exactly something that typically yields mega contracts for guys. Teams hold a lot of leverage. I think if you listen to Windhurst talk about it and just kind of think the logic behind what they did here, Hood's a guy that I think they feel they can probably retain at a reasonable salary, and he's young enough. You can talk yourself into thinking he's still going to develop, and it's a good time to negotiate. And for Rodney Hood, even if he's not going to necessarily get the type of money he's probably hoping he gets, I can't imagine there's a situation where he would sign the qualifying and then go for becoming unrestricted in 2019-20. Maybe that's on the table, but I think, Jeff, am I wrong to say that the Cavs are in a position here where they probably have a lot of leverage with Rodney Hood when it comes to contract negotiations this summer?
They have every bit of leverage they could ever want with him, because the restricted market is going to be incredibly tight. The money is already tight, you know, around the league, even for unrestricted free agents. So Hood's money is basically cratering by the day by no fault of his own. It's not like he's having a bad year. It's just the money is just not going to be out there. And it's going to be really interesting to see how much they try to squeeze him. They gave up, significant stuff, at least in Jay Crowder's great contract, even though Jay Crowder hadn't been playing very well for them. They gave up real value for him. But then again, he's not really one of their guys. He's only going to be there for a few months. And then all of a sudden it's going to be about negotiations. So there's not going to be a whole lot of like personality, like, oh, we drafted you, we really love you, like there is with some restricted free agents. So it's really, they might really put the screws to him a little bit and be like, hey, you know, every dollar they save is going to save Dan Gilbert like $6 in luxury tax payments, you know, total between salary and luxury tax. So like that's, you know, that there's a significant incentive there for them to want to lower his salary down, especially for next year, especially if LeBron James comes back. If LeBron doesn't come back, then Hood even gets a little bit weirder, because it doesn't, you know, it's not clear whether they would want him as part of their sort of rebuilding process, or if they would want to, you know, give him a little bit more money to try to entice him to stay. But then again, he's also restricted. So any offer that he goes out and gets, they can just, you know, they can match that and just retain him whether he wants to come back or not.
I also have a very hard time gauging what his market's going to be, because if you look at his PR among shooting guards, right now he's 13th in the league in PR. So he's right behind Clay, right behind Gary Harris, right behind Donovan Mitchell. Those guys, Clay is obviously, and those guys are all in a different category. Even Mitchell, who's a rookie, has the star potential that Hood doesn't. And Harris, I think, is a little bit more dependable and definitely a better defender. But you got guys like Will Barton, Buddy Hield, Wade, J.J. Redick, Crawford, Eric Gordon, Bazemore. These contracts are all over the place for a variety of reasons. You know, Barton is on his contract. Hood, I think Hield, still in his rookie contract. Wade was a veteran minimum signing for the Cavs. Redick has that mega one-year deal. Crawford has the like a mid-level exception the Wolves signed him to. Not sure about Gordon off the top of my head. Bazemore's got that fairly big contract. And then you go into Bellinelli and Hezonja. It's a weird position, because the guys that he's sort of in with in terms of PER in the 11 to 20 range have these varying contracts. And you go above him, it's guys like Mitchell, who's on a rookie deal, Jeremy Lamb, McCollum, Booker, Beal, Tyreek, Lou Will, DeMar, Oladipo. But if you're the Cavs, I think the what you're hoping for is that Lou Williams contract, which is everything we've read about and heard about it, indicates that was lower than people expected. I think you're hoping that's what you're getting, is that you're getting that type of bargain for on maybe a shorter term commitment and not, you know, signing him for 5 years or something. But 3-4 years at that number would not be a bad thing, especially if it does keep from paying him like $12 million, especially if, you know, he doesn't play that well the rest of the year for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think the mid-level exception is right about where his money should come in. I mean, I've been thinking about that for a lot of guys, just because, you know, if you have to go out and get an offer for the Cavaliers to match, then where is that money coming from? Like, is there a team with cap space who's going to be like, yeah, let's give Rodney Hood $15 million a year or $12 million? Like, it's hard to see that team out there because of how few teams there are and how many free agents there will be, especially in the unrestricted versus restricted market. So, you know, if they can get Hood to come back at about $8.6 million a year, a little more than what Lou Will got, but of course he's younger and, you know, has some more potential hopefully to unlock for his sake. I think that's where they would probably be comfortable with him in sort of that 8.6 to $9 million range. You know, somewhere in through there makes sense for me because they could pay him a little bit more than the mid-level exception. They could pay him whatever they want, really, but a little bit more than the mid-level to make him happy over having to go out and get another offer. They can control how many years that is if they want to. But for him, I think it would be really even more interesting if he were to try to get a two-year contract from them, because then that puts him into unrestricted free agency in 2020 when all the bad money from 2016 comes off the books and there's going to be a lot of cap space throughout the league. So I wouldn't, you know, it's not just with Hood, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of guys sign two-year contracts or even one plus ones if you have the leverage for that this summer so that they can get back on the market when the money is a little bit looser.
I could see the Cavs 2+1 isn't, you know, it wouldn't be terrible. Depending on who gets the option, that would kind of maybe be the sticking point. I think if you're the Cavs in this situation, you're certainly looking maybe for the three or at least the team option. Are there any, I mean, just looking at this market this summer, when you look at who's going to actually have money, and a lot of teams just won't or are going to be saving it for a max guy or something resembling a max player, are there any teams you think could throw hijinks into some sort of market because they have the money they can't spend? They have to just try to do something with it. Are there teams out there you think could just, let's say they love Rodney Hood for whatever reason, and throw something crazy out there like we've seen other teams? Look at the Nets. It didn't work out, but they tried to like sign Alan Crabb and end up getting him anyway, but you know, try to sign into that offer sheet and whatnot.
I wonder if Philadelphia might just do that, even just to think about whether they would want to bring back JJ Redick or go for a guy like Hood, overpay him a little bit because they're going to have a lot of space, especially if they are rebuffed by some of the bigger name free agents. They could throw him an offer sheet and either the Cavs match it and that puts them even deeper into luxury tax hell, or Philadelphia gets their guy. So if they like him, I think Philadelphia would be an interesting fit. The other teams who are going to have space are really, you know, at the bottom of the league, you know, so it's going to be harder for them to want to do that, or they already have a shooting guard. Like Indiana has a bunch of space, but they're not going to sign Hood to a bigger contract because they've got Victor Oladipo. So I think those are the types of teams that have space but aren't going to want to commit a bunch of money to a two guard. But Philadelphia, depending on what happens with JJ Redick and some of their other targets, might be somebody who would put a bigger offer sheet out there to try to entice Cleveland to match, and if not, then they get their guy.
Next guy we'll look at is Larry Nance Jr. He is not hitting restricted free agency this summer, but he is going to be extension eligible, and then could hit restricted free agency in the summer of 2019 before the 2019-20 season. This year, he's another guy that's kind of an interesting position because he's lumped in with guys where it's sort of hard to kind of guess at what he's going to get paid at. And he's going to play a little more center, I think, with the Cavs and maybe with the Lakers. But amongst power forwards, he's in kind of lumped in with guys like Randall, Jordan Bell, who's really listed as a power forward in this, Derek Favors, Dwight Powell, Trey Lyles, Al Horford, Zach Randolph. And then you go down, you got some, you know, more expensive guys. And again, PR's not a perfect kind of way to do this, but I wonder, I don't know, just because we don't know what that summer is going to look like, but I wonder if he's hesitant at all to negotiate going in or on the heels of a summer when he looks at 2019. I wonder if he's cautious and will look at restricted free agency, but at the same time, I wonder if there's a middle ground they could find ahead of time. It's too early to kind of know how he's going to fit in. And again, LeBron's free agency will matter a lot on this, even though I think the Cavs kind of view Nance and maybe Hood as well as a young guy they could build with. I think those are sort of, more so than Clarkson, are guys they could see building with. in a post LeBron world. But do you have any idea of what you think Nance will kind of be worth? Are there especially as we've seen big guys kind of get lower contracts as we moved away from them?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Like you said, LeBron's free agency matters a lot. I mean, it pretty much just dictates everything about this franchise at this point. But if he loves Larry Nance, then Larry Nance is going to get paid. And if he walks, then Larry Nance, depending on how Kobe Altman and the rest of his staff sort of feel about how Nance can fit into the future of the franchise, maybe they could bring him back on a lower level extension. They would still have Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love on the books for 18, 19, and 19, 20. But then after that, maybe those guys come off the books and you can turn the big man keys over to Nance. Something in that Myers-Leonard range where he got 4 for 40, obviously a very different market. Nance is probably in the 2016 market worth a lot more than 4 for 40. But in this market, maybe the Cavaliers, again, like we just talked about with Rodney Hood, where, they traded for this guy, but it's not like they've, developed and drafted and developed him. It's not like they've got that sort of personal connection with him. They may, try to put the screws in a little bit just to see where that can get them, because every dollar saved, of course, is a ton of money extra. Every dollar saved on Nance's contract is $5-6 saved out of Dan Gilbert's pockets.
What do you think of him as someone that would be worth locking up? I mean, let's do the situation when LeBron comes back. He's played well. Let's say he has a good run in the playoffs, and they're looking at their future books. Is he someone you think is worth trying to be proactive with and trying to get an extension done ahead of his good friends? Is he someone worth going those steps to do that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think especially if LeBron's coming back, then that means the Cavaliers probably, made some hay in the playoffs this season. And that probably means that LeBron is going to like him or he's going to be a part of that, I would assume. If he's not a part of that, then, you can open negotiations with him and try to get him on a bargain basement deal and be like, hey, we brought you in. You didn't perform. We'll give you X, but that's it. But if he, assuming that LeBron comes back, that's because everything went well. That's because Nance played well. That's kind of a lot of assumptions there. But assuming all of that, I would think that they would want to try to lock him up. I would think a lot of teams are going to try to lock up their restricted free agents in extensions because they can probably scare the guy's agent into saying, hey, there's no money out there. Look at what other free agents are getting this summer. Nance might look around and be like, oh my God, like I need to lock something in a little bit before my restricted free agency. Even though the money might be a little looser in 19-20, depending on what happens this summer, there's still not going to be a ton of money out there until all those bad contracts come off the books in 2020. So Nance may look around and be like, oh, I need to lock something in sooner.
If I was him, I would probably be a little proactive, and he's very much playing the part of he gets us in Cleveland, which Cleveland listeners will know is like a big deal. He is a guy that I would be trying to I play hardball a little bit, but I do think he's someone that I think makes a lot of sense to try to get at a reasonable thing ahead of time, because if he does play really well, you could maybe try to do some moving around to try to make him work otherwise and not be paid. Maybe you can, getting off Tristan's contract would be kind of really difficult, I think, but if you could find a way to include him in a deal for some other player, I think he becomes even more valuable. And if you get him on a better deal, that's just good cap management. I'm very curious to see how they approach that. And I do think a lot of it is going to be how he plays the rest of the year and how he looks in the playoffs. And this whole group, I think their ability to elevate LeBron right away, I think, is probably their biggest recruitment tool. Hill's not really playing for a contract. He's kind of just, I think, happy to be in a good position. Clarkson's already getting paid through 2020, and that's just kind of the reality of it. He's not playing for a contract. But if Hood and Nance, I think, are just obviously the most interesting, because not only do I think they have the biggest upside of who they acquired, but if they play well with LeBron, that could be paid. You pointed this out. I think the J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson contracts are, I think they get a tad bit overstated on how much LeBron plays a role in getting those guys paid. They are clutch guys, but the Cavs aren't willing to throw that kind of money at those guys, whether that was smart, whether they put in, and maybe they put in too much money into those guys. I think especially Tristan might have been a tad high. J.R. has some non-guarantees and stuff, but I think those guys are just, if they play well with LeBron, that maybe that's the best leverage they can give themselves, because they are going to be restricted free agents. I think that's it. It's not much, but it's at least something for them.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's, I think that's everything for them. I think Larry Nance and Hood have to be sitting there going, I need to not just like make LeBron happy from like a personality perspective, but just if they can play well, if they can show their value on the court for him, they can look around and be like, everybody on this team got paid because they played well with LeBron, and the guys who don't play well with LeBron get shipped out. And that's just the way things are in Cleveland. You know, if LeBron comes back, that's going to be the way things are for the next 6 years. And so I think it's just, they've got, that would be their mindset if I were them. Like that would be the mindset I would come in with, that to, you know, every day in practice, every day in the games, you really want to show how well they can, that you can fit around LeBron, because, he's a key decision maker. Whether he's the final decision maker or not is a whole other thing. But like, if he's a big part of the team, obviously, and they would want to do whatever they can to make him happy and make him want to go to management and be like, hey, we need to bring Hood back. We need to bring Nance back.
Looking at Clarkson real quick, I don't think there's much to say about his number. I think his number is a tad high for what he actually is, and he's shooting incredibly well right now in his just two games with the Cavs. But is his number like problematic? Is that 11? He's making 11.5 this year, 12.5 the year after, and then 13.4 in 2019-20, the last year's contract. For what he is and what kind of role he's going to play, is that a little too high for a backup combo guard?
For the Cleveland Cavaliers, it's not. For everybody else, it probably is. You know, it was one of those contracts that I thought was one of the worst contracts given out in 2016, you know, with the hindsight of looking at it before the deadline. And then he got moved for essentially, you know, with Nance for a first round pick and those expirings. And it's all of a sudden like, okay, that means somewhere in through there, Clarkson became a positive asset just to Cleveland, though. It's really, I don't think they'd be able to trade him for the same stuff that they gave up for him. But, you know, for Cleveland, again, in this, we got to go for it. We've got LeBron James. We need to put the best team around him right now and hope that it works out, because otherwise, you know, we're screwed no matter what. He's positive for them, even though he's probably still not a positive in the grand scheme of the league.
With you on that, wrap it up on kind of this more philosophical question of what's going on with the Cavs. This team, as you can read, all the Windhurst story is in the show notes, and you can click that, read that, look at the money. They're not probably not going to be ever get as expensive as what the Warriors are going to be and everything. But with this Cavs team, what would it, in your mind, Jeff, what is worth a $300 million price tag for Nick Gilbert? Like if you're saying next year this team is going to cost us and me $300 million, what is the way you can evaluate that is actually money well spent and not just throwing money at a wall and hoping it's enough to put a competitive team around LeBron?
I mean, you bring LeBron back and you're always in it, whether the team is, you know, finished when the season starts or they make some big trades around the deadline. You know, we now know that Kobe Altman can get in there and get stuff done at the deadline. He can build a team that makes more sense around LeBron when the team that he built before the season made sense too, but then it didn't work out and he can pivot very quickly. So you have that. So I, you know, it's not my money. I can't tell Dan Gilbert like, yeah, $300 million is worth LeBron and a bunch of other guys and hope that it works out. But, you know, I think, you know, when you have LeBron James, you spend whatever it takes to get the job done. And, you know, you just at this point hope that at that point you would hope that it works out, but you don't have to, obviously, because $300 million is a lot of money and I don't have that kind of money to spend. But, you know, I would be willing to spend whatever it took to bring LeBron back, to make him happy, to bring his guys in, like those contracts that everybody's like, oh, Tristan Thompson's overpaid, J.R. Smith's overpaid. Like when they signed those contracts, they weren't overpaid. So like those were fine contracts when they were who they were, you know, a year or two ago. And now all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, LeBron's terrible because he got his guys paid. It's like you gotta pay his friends, you gotta pay the guys that he wants to play with, you gotta put the best team around the best player since Michael Jordan, because he's the best player since Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think that ends up being the thing. I think the question just becomes like, is that like, no, it's unfair to compare them to Golden State because it's just that team is A, gonna get more, even more expensive and everything, but it just has like this unbelievable collection of talent that's really hard to match. And I think some of the ways you critique the Cavs is, are the fringe roster guys really all that good, and the guys you're supplementing your bigger name guys with, and you know, do you have the ability to are these guys gonna get any better, or do you know exactly what are they gonna look like at the end of this deal? I think that's sort of the critique, but I think next year this group, depending on what they do, and it's too early to know. Like that's the other thing. It's like this is a summer removed from really, I think, getting engaged in this. This is, I don't know if you feel this way, but I think it's totally possible that at least one or two of these guys is a short term fix more than anything, and they try to just flip them this summer. Do you think this team has any flexibility with these pieces now? Like, do you feel like they have more flexibility now than where they were at with Crowder and Isaiah and the other kind of guys they had in the books?
I mean, they're less flexible because because they had to get rid of those guys because of just the way the roster was constructed. So they weren't super flexible before because they were just those guys were expiring. So by the time the summer hits, they're not worth anything anyway because you definitely weren't going to bring Isaiah back based on how that was working with LeBron. You weren't going to bring a Channing Frye back on a deal, I wouldn't think. You know, So it was like they were less flexible before, but now they're almost gone the other way, where they've got a lot of big money contracts on the books. It's going to be harder for them to move those guys, but they've got a lot of salary fodder to include into trades because they've got more young guys who are interesting. Chetty Osman, of course, is an interesting guy. Larry Nance is going to be a restricted free agent. They've got the Brooklyn pick. Whoever they take with the Brooklyn pick is still going to have value, just like when they took Andrew Wiggins, like we talked about earlier. So I think I think they're more flexible from that perspective, in that they got another young guy. They still have the Brooklyn pick. But then they're a little bit less flexible at the top because, you know, George Hill's contract is a little bit much, and so is Jordan Clarkson.
Is the Nets pick the being, let's say, top three, the key to more flexibility? Just because it would give you, like, let's say a team takes Ayton number one, and the Cavs are two, and they take Doncic, and some team that they're trading with loves Luka Doncic. Is getting that guy who's a like just gonna be, as far as you know right now, a better, higher rated prospect than some of the guys like Colin Sexton or someone down there? I mean, could that be the key to some of this being able to be flipped, like George Hill or Tristan Thompson or someone like that? Is that the way you can make some of that, something like that, more tolerable for a team that might be moving on from someone? I think a lot of the context will matter here, like who that team is, what that team situation is. Is it like the Wolves where they're trying to reboot for a new era? But could that be the difference in actually having some flexibility where that next pick lands, and what type of prospect they can use, they can draft and then trade in the new league year with whatever salary needs to be included?
Yeah, I mean, of course, that Nets pick is behind LeBron James. That Nets pick is still their most valuable asset, even if it's seventh or eighth, and they get somebody who's, you know, sort of a mid lottery guy in that spot. That guy still on a 4-year contract, on a 4-year rookie scale contract, has more value than anybody not named LeBron. And, you know, he's still the key asset because of the Nets pick. Just because when it, you know, if it comes in even at seventh or eighth, that guy is still immensely valuable on the trade market, can still be signed and then, you know, maybe traded just, you know, and with Hill, with Thompson for a bigger piece. If LeBron says, okay, I'm willing to come back, they can go out and grab somebody big. And if either in a sign and trade or in a, you know, just a regular trade for somebody who's already under contract, that Nets pick is still immensely valuable. There's a reason that they didn't part with it at the deadline. And I think that they think that they can either, this is the most flexibility that they can give themselves, in that they can draft Doncic or somebody lower down on the tier, depending on where that pick comes in, and feel very happy with it if LeBron leaves, and they can sort of retool quickly around that guy. Or if he comes back, they can either use that guy to grab somebody else, or, you know, maybe they bring him in a little bit. LeBron plays with that guy a little bit and sees, you know, how is this going? How do I like this guy? And, you know, maybe they find, you know, they strike gold with somebody, you know, at the seventh or eighth spot in the draft.
wrap it up on this. What do you actually think of what you've seen from the new piece so far? What do you make of the basketball that we've seen from them so far?
I mean, Hill's had the ball in his hands a little more than I sort of had expected. He's playing a little more traditional point guard in a way than I had sort of thought he might. I thought he might be a little more of a space the floor, you know, stand in the corner type guy when LeBron has the ball. And when we get to the playoffs, that may still be his role. Maybe they're just sort of getting him some reps during the year to just in case he has to do that. But without Kevin Love in the rotation right now because of that injury, it's a little hard to evaluate how Hill and Hood and those guys are being integrated, because when Love comes back, that's a really big piece to have to add back to the rotation. If Love doesn't come back, I mean, I assume he will, but it's, you know, if something happens and Love never comes back, this team still looks really solid. Hill and Hood fit around LeBron really well, especially, you know, Hood is such an enigma. You know, it's hard to know exactly what you're going to get from him from game to game. But, you know, I think his ceiling fits around LeBron a lot better than a lot of guys. And Hill, of course, fits perfectly in his ability to play off the ball, play on the ball. He can defend at a high level when he's locked in, and he's definitely locked in on a Cavs team like this. But I think it's going to be really interesting when Love comes back. And Love and Hill theoretically can play really well together. Hill is a good cutter, can play off the ball if they want to, you know, run the offense through Love in the post or Love at the elbow. You know, these are things I think about when LeBron's out of the game, of course, because when LeBron's in the game, then he's got the ball for the most part. But, you know, their second unit offense is going to be really interesting when Love comes back, and how these guys fit into that, and how, you know, how much they're going to run the ball through Kevin Love versus running the ball through either Rodney Hood or George Hill.
It's going to be really interesting to watch. There's so much left for us to know before a lot of this will become clear, and that's sort of the beauty of this, is that a lot of this is going to, I think, feel more clear once we've seen this team make some kind of run towards a title and how far they actually end up getting the playoffs. But Jeff, along with myself, will be following this long way. Jeff, just everyone that can find you on Twitter and where you're everywhere you're writing, just so I make sure I didn't, because I missed him in the beginning. Just let everyone know where they can find your work.
You can find me on Twitter at JG Siegel. If you like this cap stuff that we've been talking about the whole time, I do a lot of that stuff. I tweet out cap sheets every time something happens. If you're interested in that, that's where you can find a lot of that stuff. If you're interested in the Cavaliers or any team that's not Atlanta or Portland, you can find stuff about them at Fansided's and Step Back. If you like Atlanta for whatever reason, I don't know why you would, but if you're an Atlanta Hawks fan, You can read me over at Peachtree Hoops, and if you like the Portland Trailblazers, over at Blazers Edge. Both of those are in the SB Nation network. So kind of all over the place right now. We'll see where this summer takes me, depending on a few other things. So, you know, we'll see. I may have more sites to plug next time I'm on, but for now, that's where I'm at.
If you love Dennis Schroeder for whatever reason, go read Peachtree Hoops. But you can find me in Twitter.
And if you love Dennis Schroeder and you want your team to trade for him, please actively campaign for that, because there's almost nobody in Atlanta who still wants him on the team.
Not great. Not great for German Rondo. But you can find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. Find the pod on Twitter at Lockdown Cavs. Back tomorrow with an episode of Sean Woodley from Lockdown Raptors and Raptors HQ, talking about the state of the Eastern Conference right now. Whole lot more Cavs basketball back Thursday. Enjoy your Wednesday, and we will talk again tomorrow.